Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Hello, welcome to The Aware Show. I am Lisa Garr, and it's a true joy and a privilege to be here, actually, to be with you today and to have you join me and listen to this show is my honor. So thank you so much for being here. We are going to kind of turn our regular view of things on its head today. How many times have we bought a product that a celebrity has endorsed? What exactly is the Kardashian effect? Why do we adorn athletes and, in many cases, let celebrities and high-powered, high-profile figures get away with so much, like sexual harassment and assault and so forth? What is that exactly? Well, I'm really excited about this conversation because I really do want to know. Joining me is Dr. Brian Boxer Wachler, and he is talking about his book, which is called The Brain's Secret to Seeing Past Illusion and Misperception. It's called Perceptual Intelligence. It's the brain's secret to seeing past illusion and misperception and self-deception. So it's ultimately self-deception. It's our own responsibility in this whole thing. This is going to be great. Welcome to the show, Brian. Thank you for joining me.
Pleasure to be here, Lisa.
So I did mention Dr. Brian. You are an ophthalmologist?
I am.
That's fascinating. So tell me a little bit about your medical history as an ophthalmologist. You practice in Santa Monica?
I started ophthalmology because I wanted to help people, and that's why I became a doctor. And the reason I wrote the book is really very different, and a lot of people think, well, how did you come to write a book about perception? Because that seems like it's about psychology. Mm-hmm. So I have to take you further back than my medical training and take you back to when I was in sixth grade, where I secretly checked out from the library at the school, Judy Blume's Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
I love that book. That's one of my favorite books ever.
Me too.
Great book. Great book. Yes.
So I did this because I was just naturally curious how the mind of the opposite sex works.
Amazing. Yeah.
So then at UCLA, when I was in college, I was a psychology and a biology major or psychobiology major because I wanted to further understand the inner workings of the mind, but then also do my pre-medical training and studies too.
They have that great Norman Cousins Center there.
It's a fantastic school.
Fantastic yes.
school. And it's just grown and grown and gotten even better. And so then the reason I got inspired to actually write the book was I was already an ophthalmologist. I was a specialist in a condition of the eye called keratoconus, which is where the cornea of the eye, the outer lens, bulges out like a hernia and causes a tremendous amount of distortions. Mm. And the conventional treatment at the time before I developed these procedures was a cornea transplant. So a patient of mine who happened to be the U.S. bobsledder, Stephen Holcomb, was the top prospect for winning a gold medal back in 2010 at the Winter Olympics when he was getting ready for it, and he had keratoconus. Long story short, these procedures that I developed, I treated his keratoconus and restored his vision, and he then won a gold medal at the Vancouver Winter Olympics.
Wow.
And that was in 2010. It was historic because it was the first gold for the United States in bobsled in 62 years.
Wow.
Harry Truman was president the last time the U.S. won gold.
Oh, my goodness.
So then at the 2014 Winter Olympics, I was there in Sochi to support Stephen. He became a dear friend by then. And I witnessed him not only winning two bronze medals, but I also was witnessing what Vladimir Putin was doing in terms of manipulating the world's perception.
I just saw a whole documentary on this, Icarus.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
How he was the puppet master for the world's media during the Olympics, making himself look like he was Snow White and benevolent.
Running this huge doping campaign for all of the Russian athletes, fully through the government.
And that came out afterwards.
Uh-huh.
But even before I saw what he was doing in terms of relocating villages to make room for building the Sochi venues without even compensating them, human rights suppression and abuses. There were a tremendous amount of stray dogs that were all killed. And here he is, on the other hand, giving the impression that he's this humanitarian, he's, you know, sedating tigers, he's riding horseback bare-chested, he's participating in airdrops to put out forest fires. And it's really, that was when I started writing the book, because I realized that perception is not always reality, and that was a very timely, topical reason with Putin to start getting going on this project. And I'd always been interested in psychology, as I discussed.
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, you can take this conversation all the way to social media and social media effects and so forth. I mean, things spread like wildfire, and it's all hearsay. It's all hearsay. So what about the brain grabs onto these shiny objects? What is it? The Kardashian effect I opened with. Yeah.
Let me first even explain, and this is really important what you just brought up, and we'll talk about that. But I want to also explain the concept of what is perceptual intelligence.
Yes.
It's how we interpret our experiences to separate fantasy from reality, or what's real from not real. So in a way, it's like having a built-in BS detector in your head, and that can allow you to make better and smarter decisions in your life. And that was another reason I wrote the book too, because then I wanted to really help people improve their game so they can have what they want in life, whether it's better job, better relationships, better sex. Yeah, you heard me say that.
Mm-hmm.
More success, more happiness. And that's what the information in the book is about. So when we talk about examples like the Kardashians and celebrities, it's because of what is called the halo effect. Anybody has a halo effect when they have people that admire them and look up to them. And I'll give you one story that's very poignant. A lot of people can relate to this. Jamie Lee Curtis, a very well-respected actress, ranks very high on the Celebrity Trust Index, was doing commercials for – yes, there is a Celebrity Trust Index.
Really?
Tom Hanks is number one, by the way.
Huh.
And the commercials Jamie Lee Curtis was doing was for Activia yogurt. But the problem was the company's claim of improved digestion turned out to be false. But here a celebrity and a company together hijacked the perceptual intelligence and judgment of a lot of people who ran out and bought this yogurt expecting a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of the halo effect. So that's why when people are admired, they can speak in areas outside of what they're known for or have any experience or expertise in, and people will be likely to believe it and adopt it.
That's very true. So how do I know you're a doctor from an ophthalmologist? You've got a shirt on that says your name.
I did get my credentials on the internet. I have to come clean, Lisa.
Please tell me you didn't.
No, I went to Dartmouth Medical School.
So there's – okay, so then how do we see beyond that halo? And how do we know to look into, you know, how to research things and also to get beyond all the fake news around it?
That's a great question, and we have to have really good critical thinking skills, for one, because if you have that ability, then you will have good perceptual intelligence because you're able to think critically about what's coming at you. But it's not as easy as it sounds, because we all also come to the table with emotions, mm-hmm. with our upbringing from our parents, cultural upbringing, religion, mm-hmm. and even DNA that can affect our decisions and affect if we can really tease out of the mess what's really true and what's not. And I think emotions are probably the number one reason people get into trouble, is because emotions, when they're tied to beliefs, it's hard to, number one, recognize that in the heat of the moment. imagine you're having an argument with somebody. Mm-hmm. You've got emotions tied to your belief versus mm-hmm. just calmly having a discussion, which right. nowadays is very tough because people are so emotional about their beliefs and their opinions. Mm-hmm. So when you can at least recognize that, then you can take a few breaths and try to objectively see if you're believing something that really is valid, and then you can research it and be open to the other side and have that empathy for people with other opinions too. And that dialogue calmly these days is really important because mm-hmm. we've lost a lot of that.
I know. I'm very gullible. I'm always the first person to be picked out by like a hypnotist. I'm really good with stuff like, I mean,
are you walking around with your eyes closed and your arms out?
I'm a chicken.
Why?
You know, it's bad. I mean, I tend to believe people and want to see the good in them before the bad. And that's gotten me in a ton of trouble. I've looked at people as always good, and I've gotten, you know, shockingly hurt by that. Yeah.
Honestly, I think I would rather be like you and have the benevolence of giving people the benefit of the doubt, because that means you're going to be more kind. And you're going to practice kindness.
I'm done. Everyone sucks right now. No, this is good. For a little bit of skepticism for me is very good. It is very good. That's what you're talking about with perceptual intelligence, is that to look at things with a little bit more of the eye that I'm saying right now is everything sucks.
I think it's a balance, right? It's
yeah.
a marriage. And in fact, the other side of perceptual intelligence, we've been really talking about the analytical, right, Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's
right.
another
it's
side.
The brain of, part.
Right. But then there's another side, which is the intuition and the gut feelings, which I discuss in the book too. And you can't be high in both at the same time because, again, it's a balance. And you have to know when you should be more analytical about something and when to follow your gut feeling, which may be absent of really any analysis. It's an idea came to you and you feel that it's an important idea and perhaps you act on it.
Are those different parts of the brain, the analytical and the feeling?
Well, feelings are definitely wrapped up in a different part than our analytical area in the brain. And with experience, and the book helps people understand that about themselves, to unlock the potential to make better decisions and know when you should follow your intuition and gut feeling. If you're falling asleep at night and suddenly an idea hits you, at least don't discount it. Pay attention to it, evaluate it, and then see if it makes sense. I think a lot of people these days just don't even pay attention to that. They don't believe that there might be some other area where they get information from, whether the subconscious or perhaps, dare I say, guardian angels, mm-hmm. you know, with souls. Which can't be proven, but
right. We talk about them a lot here,
and I don't
the mansions. We talk about it all,
and I don't doubt that they exist. Although we just don't have the technology to detect that.
That's an interesting point you bring up. So, when you look at a celebrity that exists and they're talking about a specific product, you're more than likely to believe or in or buy that product. If you talk about a guardian angel that doesn't physically exist, nor are they endorsing a product, they don't really get a lot of a belief, do they? I mean, you don't see it, although I've had plenty of evidence in my life of being, you know, saved many, many times where there it should never have happened.
I'm going to give you an example that I talk about in the book. It's a story when I was at UCLA. I was on the speech and debate team.
Mm-hmm.
And we were coming back from a tournament up in Northern California, and we had these huge V8 station wagons that we would travel in, like packs, right? And we got on the freeway. We were coming back, and normally I always wear my seatbelt like a good, you know, Boy Scout. And I was smashed in the middle, you know, of the back row of the bench seat. And the seatbelt was just wedged in between the seats, and it was just really hard to get to. So I just figured I'm going to go without wearing a seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not too long into the ride, this idea just comes to me saying, wear your seatbelt. I didn't think about it. It just hit me. And I thought, I'm going to kind of – because I already was in tune about intuition even back then at that age.
Mm.
So I paid attention to that idea. I fought. I finally squeezed the seatbelt out from the two cheeks of the seats,
mm-hmm.
and I put it on. No less than 30 seconds later, the car blew a tire. We spun around on the freeway, didn't roll luckily, and went into a ditch off the freeway. If I wasn't wearing that seatbelt, I would have been spun around like change in a washing machine. And at worst, I would have been bruised. At the least, I would have been bruised. At the worst, I would have been ejected from the car.
Yeah.
So I look at that as I got a sign. Yeah. I had an intuition, and I followed it.
Mm-hmm. That's very – I mean, that's a good thing to follow, and that's what you're saying is the perceptual intelligence that you're saying is if you look at something, use your intuition to measure against it to see if it is really truly what it says it is, right?
That's part of it, because we have to filter what's coming at us. And there's some things where you might feel you need to be more analytical and you don't have a gut feeling about it, and others where it's the other side, where you do have the gut feeling and the intuition. And I'm not saying always follow it. You know, we don't want people going postal all the time when they get frustrated and waiting in line at the DMV.
Mm-hmm.
But at least pay attention to it and analyze it and see if it makes sense to go to the next level and act on it.
Where has the perception of somebody not proven to be what it's supposed to be, what it's marketed to be?
I think when people have their emotions very tied, we talked about that before.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. We talked about A-list celebrities like Jamie Lee Curtis. Well, the halo effect, which affects people's emotions and their decisions because it's preying on those with, in a way, low perceptual intelligence because they're not able to separate what's real from not real. I'll read a little chapter from the book, Laughing All the Way to the Bedroom.
Okay.
Even comedians at the bottom of the pecking order, so now we're talking about the non-A-listers, have observed the effect of the halo's glint of celebrity on the PI of comedy club audiences. Being on stage, even in a small comedy club, bestows an aura of celebrity on those in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
After the show, comedians often hang around the bar where chances are high that adoring fans will flitter to them like moths to a flame. The endearing industry term for these groupies is, and Lisa, I'm going to censor myself here.
Thank you. Because, yeah.
The endearing industry term for these comedy groupies is chuckle bleepers.
Okay, so they're actual groupies that hang around, and they are more than likely just because someone's on stage to want to be with them.
Exactly. And even these comedians that are low on the pecking order, they have a command to hold their own on stage.
There's a term for this.
That's the insider comedian term that mm-hmm. they refer, you know, comedians hanging around saying, hey, I had a few chuckle bleepers last mm-hmm. night.
I also saw this documentary on, it was a documentary on a cult. And this cult is in Los Angeles and very prominent in LA that most people didn't even realize that they were a part of. And I met one of the people who was in this and she said it was beautiful. You know, it seemed like a beautiful and everything they said made perfect sense. She didn't realize she was in a cult until much more deeply into it. So, when people get involved with things like that, it could even be a religion or, a buying trend. How do you teach them to – well, let's talk about the brain. So what part of the brain is active or not active with people with low perceptual intelligence?
There's the cerebral cortex, which is where our decision-making comes from. That's what separates us from a lot of other species.
Uh-huh.
And when you're incorporating other factors such as emotions, which is a different part of the brain, it can definitely affect the ability for the cerebral cortex to do its job. And you talk about religion. I'll give you a humorous example of how people who have very strong religious upbringings or just happen to have developed a very strong faith in life have believed that they've seen the Virgin Mary in some pretty unusual places.
Right.
And it's because of a condition called pareidolia. It sounds like a very fancy term, but I can guarantee you we've all experienced it. Have you ever looked up in the clouds and seen a human face?
A duck, things like that, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we're primed to see faces because as babies we've grown up seeing the doting faces of our parents. So we want to see this in objects. And so people who have this strong religious background, they've seen and believe they've seen the Virgin Mary in the skillet burns of a grilled cheese sandwich and paid $28,000 for it, which actually
happened
on eBay. It was auctioned off on eBay. So, but this is not the domain of just the Virgin Mary, Lisa. There have been a number of Jesus sightings,
apparitions,
too.
And so forth. Yeah.
You know Cheetos?
Yeah.
Jesus has been seen on a Cheeto. Cheeses, if you prefer.
Stop it. You cannot be serious.
Well, yes, yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yeah, also seen on many
places. Are you serious?
Virgin Mary has been seen also on a
tree
stump.
Jesus, really?
Jesus, yes.
You're kidding.
Jesus.
Have you heard of this? Oh, my goodness.
Now, of course, Virgin Mary and Jesus are really not in all these places, but people who really strongly have these emotions with their religion believe that and will.
Because I don't think they eat junk food. All right, so let's see.
I eat some junk food sometimes.
Well, all right, so let's go after what I've been talking about in terms of the Kardashian effect. There was a pop-up store in the mall that it was around, I think, the last holiday season, and one of the Kardashian sisters put up the store, and there was lines down the mall, I mean hours long, for lipsticks, lip kits. And these teenagers, because they were a low-price item, really smart marketing, in low price, limited supply, urgency, holiday. It was perfect ingredients for this, you know, billion-dollar pop-up, probably. How do you tell a teenager who's all their friends are doing it to not buy these lip kits? I mean, nothing against Kylie. I think she's a brilliant marketer. I think the whole family, brilliant, brilliant marketers.
Definitely.
But to give these, you know, teenagers some discernment qualities, because social media does this all the time. Kylie only promoted on social media. Only. And there's like a, you know, website, and you had to pay $3 to be a part of it in order to get the announcement about the thing. So I'm talking about brilliant marketing. But how do you teach the teenage brain to be discerning?
It's a challenge.
This should be a required reading in high school.
Well, I appreciate that endorsement.
Yes. All high schools, you should have this full intelligence. Yeah.
I think it's a challenge because children, and I have 11-year-old daughters, so they're not really in the high school stage. Like, they haven't gone through this yet. But I see it, and I've been through it myself. And it's a challenge because this is a time in life when children are becoming adults. It's that teenage years, and they're trying to find their identity, number one. They're trying to fit in. Now, some don't care about fitting in. I was actually one of those types of kids, so I was really the exception. You know, I remember I went on a trip once with a group of people, and I went to the Salvation Army store and purposely bought the ugliest Bermuda shorts you could find and wore T-shirts that didn't match because I was sort of the anti, you know, cool kid group.
Fit in, yes.
And I was happy to do that. But for most kids, they're not like that. They are developing their own sense of self, and I think having the discussion is important with them. And as we know, you can't necessarily tell teenagers what to do. But I think if you can have the dialogue with them to help them perhaps understand why they're doing it, is it because they really want to, or is it because their friends are doing it, or is it because a celebrity is endorsing it? And giving them at least a little bit of insight. And at the end of the day, Lisa, you don't know what's going to remain years later. But it's important at least to have that dialogue.
And then, you know, what's the real difference between the Kylie lip kit buyer and the President Trump voter? It was all
usually
perception.
Usually about 30 years.
Same thing. Same thing. You know, it's all perception. He had a campaign that was marketing towards the class that needed the most, and he was voted in. So it's there. It spans all different. I mean, once it starts, it's hard to stop.
It's everywhere, right?
It's everywhere.
I'll say this, Lisa. I like to say we don't have a constitutional crisis in our country right now. We have a perceptual crisis in our country.
You've got a good point.
Because people have to have the critical thinking skills, and schools nowadays aren't providing that. Parents usually aren't aware of this. So if we don't understand how to think critically about everything around us, we're just going to get sucked into the vacuum cleaner that everyone else is, and whoever's running that vacuum cleaner is just scooping everybody up.
Yeah.
And I think having good critical thinking skills is a good start.
You were probably really good on the debate team.
We were actually national champions.
I believe that, because you could probably find anything and unspin it.
Well, I'll tell you, the most valuable lesson I learned was to think critically, but then also we had to debate the other side of each issue and each topic. So we couldn't be so emotionally married to one side. We had to be on the other side. And I was the only – this was the hilarious thing. I was the only pre-med student on the debate team. You can guess everyone else. They were all pre-law.
Right.
And they're like, what's this pre-med guy doing with us? But I just loved what I was doing.
Fascinating.
But it taught me how to empathize and to see both sides and to arrive at what would be, you know, in one's opinion, the right solution or conclusion. But you have to at least consider both sides.
Do you love to find out why people do what they do?
That's psychology.
Fascinating.
That's why I read Judy Blume's Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, because I wanted to understand.
Why
I was curious.
Do
I still am.
Me too.
I'm still curious.
Why do you think I host a radio show? All right, let's take us to another level about the entire sexual harassment and sexual assault topic. So there is this perception that high-powered people in high power could take advantage of women. And when I heard that Harvey Weinstein actually had that in his contract, that an attorney put in his contract that he could legally sexually assault women, that was legal as long as somebody signs off on it, that it blew my mind. So that it caused this movement to instantly recreate these laws that you can't do that. And all of this is great that it's coming out now, but what, you know, I would love to know what the perception has been. And speaking as a woman who was raised from a mother in the – she was in the 50s when she was, you know, growing up. You were taught as a girl to be a good girl, to be polite, to always say sorry, 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 please, thank you. A little bit of a subservient role. And this is the way that you were taught as, you know, to have manners as a young woman. So that led right into other people have power over me, that this guy can do this, but I don't have to say anything. Oh, my God, everybody else is doing it. Oh, he's a player. He's a playboy. These are all perceptual memes that are out there.
Correct.
And it's finally getting exposed, but it takes this much of a momentum in order for this to get turned upside down, because this is a big one.
I equate this to being as much of the power of some legislation we've seen in the past for female empowerment and gender equality. Even though this is not a legislated law that's coming out of Washington, like the right to vote for women in 1920 or the Married Women's Property Acts in 1839 that gave them the legal right to be independent from men.
Right.
But we're seeing an empowerment coming from this explosion of media coverage like we've never seen before. And, you know, I'm a very big supporter of female empowerment and gender equality. I changed my last name when my wife and I got married 24 years ago to Boxer Walkler. I was originally Brian Walkler. And she changed it from Selena Boxer to Selena Boxer Walkler. So I'm one of the few men in the country who have a maiden name.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's very good. That's great.
You know, so I understand this, and I'm very supportive of what's happening right now.
This is definitely a very timely book also, because there is a movement, a grassroots movement of the power being back in the hands of the people. Now, I'm not quite sure why we're not looking at the president for the sexual harassment, because that was the whole point of the campaign against him, was the, the tapes that came out in the locker room about locker room talk.
I'll explain why.
Oh, good. Please do.
I have to go to Conan O'Brien for the answer.
Okay.
Now, you can find this on YouTube, his show. It was very entertaining. During the election, he had two focus groups that he hired, a legitimate group that did focus groups. And he had Trump supporters in one show. And another show, completely separate, were Hillary supporters. And what he did is had an impersonator for Trump saying completely offensive, terrible things. And Hillary impersonator the same thing.
Same things that he actually said that
Trump
actually
said?
No,
made up. So it was an impersonator saying, like, there was one comment he made, the Trump impersonator, and everybody in the room is listening to the impersonator, believing it's really Trump speaking, saying, oh, you know, Ivanka, she's hot. I mean, she's so voluptuous. Oh, my gosh. She's like, as if he's talking about his wife, right? Uh-huh. And there were lots of these kind of really offensive comments that were made up. And they went around and interviewed everybody in the room. Not one person changed their position. They all made excuses for why he said this or why he did this, what was alleged in these impersonations, because their emotions were so tied to their candidate and their position, nothing was going to change them, absolutely nothing. But the same exact thing was for Hillary Clinton supporters. There was one comment I remember from that impersonation. All the supporters are in the room listening around this TV that was playing the audio of the impersonation. And one comment was to Chelsea, you know, Chelsea, I know you're getting ready to deliver your baby soon, but, you know, I just really need your help on the campaign. This is a big moment for me right now. Can you just push off delivering that baby until after the campaign? And all these other comments that were just crazy.
Yeah,
but everybody
yeah.
around the table explained it away. They rationalized. Well, you know, one person said, you know, she just really needs Chelsea's help. Of course I understand. I mean, she's running for president. So nobody changed their position, again, because they were so emotionally tied. So when you bring up the tapes of Trump in the locker room, that explains why none of the diehards changed their position.
Interesting. Who was that on? It was
Conan O'Brien.
Conan. Yeah, so you can still see that on YouTube.
You can find it on YouTube. It's entertaining, but insightful.
It proves your point. Absolutely. Okay, so let me ask you about some athletes and so forth. Athletes have, well, gosh, it's such a controversial topic now. I don't know if they're even truly athletes because of all the doping that's now being uncovered and so forth. But why do people idolize them so much?
It's the same as celebrities. They have a halo effect.
Mm.
People see them on TV. They see them doing miraculous physical feats in whatever sport it is. Therefore, people admire them and look up to them. But they're subject to believing things that athletes say or do if they're on the other end of the halo effect, mm-hmm. being taken advantage of, just like anyone else from a celebrity or a Weinstein or a Louis C.K.
Fascinating. All right, so one of the points in here is, why do we feel compelled to return a favor?
The reason is we have a psychological guilt. If somebody does something for us, that we want to do something back for them. And that's natural,
right,
to a degree.
An indebtedness.
Yeah, feeling indebted. You don't want to walk around feeling like you got something and didn't do anything nice back. So when salespeople and marketers, though, leverage this, that's where people can get into trouble. And I'll give you an example. Somebody goes to look at a car at a dealership. The salesperson isn't pouring you unlimited coffee refills because he or she feels so sorry you look very sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to feel indebted that they gave you something with some free food that perhaps in return you'll put a few thousand dollars down on a car. So the reciprocation is not equal in order for it to be fulfilled in the one party's eyes.
It's the buy one, get one free concept. Is that here's a free, this is a huge sales concept now, is the BOGOs. Yeah, if we'll give you this one for free, if you buy this one, it's like, why not?
That's the reciprocation principle. And actually, that's a term I didn't coin. It was Dr. Robert Cialdini, who's a professor in Arizona.
But
yeah.
We don't even look, we look at the fact that we get one free, but we don't look at the fact that the buying the one has double in price.
Right. Timeshares do this too. I remember when I was in college, we went up to go skiing at some place, and there was a timeshare company wanting to give, you know, free dinner mm-hmm. for listening to their timeshare
right,
presentation.
Right,
you get the free dinner. They're hoping you'll put a deposit and buy a timeshare.
Right.
I just went for the free dinner because I was a starving student.
Well, that makes sense.
They lost some money on me there.
So Black Friday. Let's talk about that. This is the highest Black Friday sales in history. $6.6 billion.
That's it?
$6.6 billion.
Most of that's probably on Amazon, too.
Most of it was on mobile devices.
Right.
So the large, not only were the online sales surpassed the in-store sales, but the online sales on mobile devices surpassed the desktop. So what that's showing is the marketing is right there in the palm of your hand, the devices we need to be very smart about.
Well, I think to speak to your first point, from a psychological point of view, when people believe that something is going to be taken away from them,
mm-hmm.
In sales, it's called takeaway selling.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few ways of doing that. You say, we have 120 of these, and once they're gone, they're gone. Or you say, the sale is going to expire in 48 hours. One way or another, the prospect or the potential customer believes that what they have is going to be taken away. And that's so powerful, Lisa, that can take people who had no interest in, let's say, buying a lamp,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they know that this lamp is now going to expire, the sale is going to expire in 48 hours, or there's only so many of them left, which makes them scarce. It can get people even off the fence who had no interest in buying a lamp, going out and buying that lamp because they don't want to lose out
mm-hmm.
on this mm-hmm. opportunity to save money.
Right.
And
right.
Marketers know that. That's well known in the marketing industry. And people need to be aware of that so they don't fall prey to that.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because any network that you would be on in terms of being interviewed on has these commercials. It's all scarcity. It's all timed. It's a very typical marketing strategy. And then you're talking about undoing all of that. Have you received any feedback about that?
I've had a number of death threats.
You're kidding.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm hoping. See, I'm not as gullible as you think.
I was testing you.
Nope. Not going to do it. Well, it's good that you're exposing this, and I really think that's interesting. Has it had any impact on your ophthalmology business?
This is really a labor of love for me because I want to help people make better decisions. I see so many people in my practice. I've tens and thousands of people over the last 20 years of my career. And I've seen some people make good decisions and some people make poor decisions. And I know that there's a real need to help people take back more control of what's in their realm, mm-hmm. what's in their domain. And by enabling people to understand how to tease out the truth, that helps in all areas in life, too.
I mean, there's in your industry a huge push for these LASIK eye surgery places. You know, get one eyeball for free.
And in the beginning of my career, I was a LASIK surgeon. When I first started when I was at UCLA on faculty, and my practice was probably like 90% LASIK because I'm accordion-trained ophthalmologist. And then you had those discount LASIK centers come out.
I know.
And it was treating a very delicate, very, very highly precise procedure like a commodity.
Yeah.
But you had the same sort of marketing principles of, you know, here's the deal, here's a discount, it expires then. And we had people coming in back in the early days of LASIK. Now it's over 25 years old, so it's stood the test of time. But, you know, some of these chop shops back then were really damaging some people's eyes, and I was able to fix them because that was part of my cornea training.
Goodness.
But I was seeing the good and the bad.
The burn. Oh, Lord. Yeah, interesting.
Anybody listening, if you're considering LASIK, this is where you get what you pay for oftentimes.
My goodness. Yes. So we were talking a little bit about the sexual predators and how we, you know, people fell so easily prey into these different types of scenarios where it was socially acceptable to be sexually harassed. Now, what is it that people can listen for so that they have more discernment, more perceptual intelligence around, you know, how not to be in that situation?
Number one, recognize that if somebody's powerful or influential or popular like a celebrity, recognize that doesn't give them the right to do things that you wouldn't allow someone else to do. So when you are least aware, that gives you more power of your decisions. And so in the future, if that happens or about to happen to you, whether you're a woman or a man, less likely, or a young girl or a young boy, know, say no and report it. And that's why this explosion in the media right now is so empowering for women, because it's opened up this dialogue, and parents should be having these conversations with their girls and their boys, because this is an opportunity to explain to the boys, you need to be respectful to girls and to women.
Right. Or if it's happening to them. This is, I mean, the Massage Envy story was the one that caught me the most. It was the massage franchise, and that they had multiple reports on sexual advancements and even rape during a massage, and they did nothing about it. Police did nothing about it. The company did nothing about it. And so, in a way, it's fantastic that all of this, and I'm so sorry for the pain that it's caused people, but they're finally being heard and vindicated, which is amazing that those types of industries can get exposed and finally get exposure of, you know, that something was, talk about a perceptual meme, ever attended to. I mean, there was nothing done about it.
And that's definitely at fault for management of any company that doesn't do something about that when it's reported to them. And that's changing now. That's going to change big time, because there's so much awareness now about this. It's so much a part of the dialogue, and it's out in the open, that even a man thinking about doing this now is going to think twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's ramifications. You know, people are getting – it's like a giant weed whacker coming through and mowing all these people down, mostly men. And men are seeing this. Mm-hmm. So it's going to make them think twice.
Right.
And it's helping women, because there's so many other women now talking about it. This is another side of perceptual intelligence, the chapter about social influence, when you tend to do what people are doing around you.
Right.
But this is a positive aspect of social influence, because now – more women are more comfortable bringing this up, reporting it, talking about it, telling other people, because they've seen so many other people do it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Now, in the book, by the way, it's called Perceptual Intelligence, recommended reading for all schools, I believe. I put that on the reading list. Brian Boxer Wackler, by the way, is my guest. Now, you mentioned in the subtitle here, The Brain's Secret to Seeing Past Illusion, Misperception, and Self-Deception. What do you mean by self-deception?
People can deceive themselves into believing what they want to believe. And it's almost in a way like falling in love with somebody who has got some serious issues and problems, but the dopamine flood in your brain, you've deceived yourself. Mm. And you're not seeing what's really there that other people might see. I mean, have we all had an occasion where we have a good friend who was going out with somebody or dating somebody, maybe even married somebody, that we all saw, this is not good.
Yeah.
Like, don't do this. This is bad. Mm-hmm. But the person in love was blind to it, right? Mm-hmm. Love is blind.
Right.
That's the expression for a reason.
Same thing with shopping. Does same dopamine effect. Same thing, which is why it's so – there's so many different – I mean, you can walk into a mall – and there will be so many different psychological effects that get you to buy something. You have to be hyper aware of not falling prey to that, like by going in with a specific list. And I heard this report recently that if people buy the supersize cereal boxes, they're more than likely to eat that amount as opposed to buying the smaller sizes.
But they see that they're getting a better value by buying something bigger, mm-hmm. right? The amount of food per dollar is higher when you buy a larger quantity, and they don't want to miss out on that. And that's part of it too. It would be – I mean, I could go with you, Lisa, to a store and take a tour, and in the first 5 minutes probably point out 20 different things that have to do with perceptual intelligence and sales and marketing.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah.
And here's the free food sample.
Yes.
And – number of people are going to go buy the product because they got the free sample. So there's reciprocation acting right there too.
Yeah. It's smart marketing.
Well, and I have to say the book is, you know, it's also being used by marketers and salespeople and business people too, because it's discussing these principles. So they're learning how to do these psychological warfare techniques, but also the book is really meant for people to understand that and help be more bulletproof to that.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of being intelligent when it comes to anything that has to do with a social influence, being discerning, is there a certain step that you suggest to buffer yourself against those impulse decisions or buys or influences?
It's not always easy. The information in the book helps people do better at it. And I have to just even say, doing the book, I learned a lot myself, because there's a lot of research based in the book too. But I think one thing, the most important take-home message, is that if people can recognize when their emotions are at play in their decisions and beliefs, that allows you to at least take a pause, step back, take a few breaths, and then analyze what you're believing and the direction you're going in. And like I said, it's not always easy because, you know, emotions trigger dopamine. If it's a positive emotion, there's reciprocal bad behavior too. Hence the expression, hell hath no fury, like a woman scorned. So, right, if somebody does something bad to you, I mean, that's using kind of from the classic novel story. But if somebody does something bad to you, we have a urge to want to get revenge. Mm-hmm. And that's reciprocal bad behavior. And that's emotional as well. So recognizing emotions with your beliefs and behaviors, or behaviors that are maybe about to occur, that's important. But you're in the heat of the battle when you have emotions, right?
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you can do to stop yourself from having that dopamine response?
Taking 3 deep breaths is always a good recommended thing. If you're about to go say something to somebody in the heat of the moment, try to remember, take 3 deep breaths. And that allows you to calm down, mm-hmm. especially if they're 3 slow breaths. Things change in your body. You start to simmer down a little bit. It's very powerful. Mm. And you can take back control of your own emotions by doing something so simple, but yet so powerful, to perhaps bring you back from saying or doing something that you might really regret.
Especially when it comes to texting and trigger texting and so forth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What do the dating sites have to do with this perceptual intelligence, with the swipe left, swipe right, the type of concept of dating?
I have to say, and this is going to be probably a little bit of a unconventional comment, but for people who might otherwise be sexually abusing women, having sexual misconduct, I think sites like this potentially could provide a much safer way to fulfill a need that they have. Because on these sites, everybody is in this for the same reason, right? You're talking about like the Tinder sites, like just the pure hookup sites, right?
Right.
Yeah. So everything's essentially, for the most part, mutually
people
acceptable.
Are there for the same reason, okay.
Right. I mean, there's mutual consent. So I think the expectations are pretty known and they're similar. The expectations are, everybody kind of knows what they're there for. And
isn't that a perceptual influence?
It is. You know, there's biological needs that people have, right, sexually. And, you know, this is biological. I mean, there were times in our country's history when teenage boys masturbating was considered a sin and dangerous. And even the doctors back in the early 1900s in our country published medical studies stating that teenage boys that pleasure themselves had increased risk later in life of having psychiatric problems, heart disease, and other things. And this was really because of the religious influence from the church.
Right.
Because of the story of King Onan, who spilled his seed, and that was a sin. Mm-hmm. And that's affected, you know,
generations
all over the world. And that was the reason for chastity belts. Chastity belts were for, prescribed by doctors in the United States for teenage boys to stop them from, you know, doing the American Pie thing that Jason Biggs did.
I thought that was for women.
No, that's a fallacy, actually. The medieval,
chastity belt were for men?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yep. I researched that.
You did.
And it turns out to be a fallacy. They were prescribed by doctors for the teenage boys.
Is that what you were talking about with Mark Twain?
Yes.
His thoughts on masturbation was perceptual intelligence.
He was the one person back then who definitely had high perceptual intelligence because he knew this is a biological normal phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave a talk in Paris to a group of French intellects, and he explained in so many – back then it was called Onanism because of King Onan. It wasn't called masturbation back then. But he explained that this is a biological normal thing, and he made fun of it by stating that, you know, Homer in the Iliad said, give me death or give me, a good time in my hand or something along those lines.
Mm.
So, you know, he was making fun of this concept that people thought it was bad for you. And he did it back then in France because I think the States was still too conservative. But French was more open, more open society. But that's the history of chastity belts and Mark Twain. He was all in on it.
You
back
go
then.
All the way back there with perceptual intelligence.
he understood. He really did. So he's like, PI, perceptual intelligence of the Jedi Knight Order back then.
Well, I mean, I see this mostly where it comes up with social influence, where it comes into marketing play. Where it comes into even what about a hierarchy in a corporation where the perception of the CEOs and the CFOs have power over you in terms of maybe you know more than they do. Maybe you have knowledge on them that they don't want you to know. But because of the perception of their title, they have power. So it can be exercised in any hierarchical situation, right?
It certainly can. And if you're an underling in a company, well, you know there's a company culture that you usually conform to.
Right.
But if your boss is giving a presentation, and actually I believe even one of the questions, because we have a perceptual intelligence self-test at the end of the book, and one of the questions talks about that actually, and your boss is giving a presentation and you know it's wrong, what do you do? And it gives four – each question has four choices, and some are just for fun. And some are, to help people really – most of them are to help people really understand how they're doing on the PI scale after reading the book. But one of the options is to politely discuss your opinion with your boss after the meeting in private because you don't want to embarrass your boss.
Right.
And you don't want to do anything rude in front of people if it's a meeting. So there are socially acceptable ways to still explain your opinion – but not have negative ramifications from that.
That's very interesting. So you can take a test at the end of this and you can tell how susceptible you are to what your perceptual intelligence is.
It gives you a score at the end.
Mm-hmm. Is there a website that people can also take that on?
It's not on the website. It's just in the book at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a website, perceptualintelligence.com.
That's great. Well, that's fantastic. Here's one of the other things is when you – after a big sporting event, and I noticed this when the Dodgers were here in the World Series and so forth, and the perception of the ticket price, that really annoyed me. Thousands of dollars those seats were going for that were high up in the back of the rafters that were like $30-$40 in the midseason. And I just was annoyed by that.
Well, you should be. You definitely should be, Lisa.
I was highly annoyed by that.
And it's because fans – there's a whole chapter on fans here in sports, right? So we have – so we discuss that in great detail. Fan is short for the word fanatical.
Uh-huh.
So – and that's going to be emotional, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have fans that are emotionally tied to their team. And anytime you have an adversary – against an opponent, one person is going to get sucked into supporting usually. So that's why sports work so well in terms of galvanizing fans to a team. But you add now the scarcity that the last time the Dodgers were in the World Series was probably before a number of people were even born.
Right.
And now they're in the World Series. So you have scarcity acting.
Uh-huh.
You have the emotional aspect of being a fan. And that's how you get tickets going in the rafters for thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a perfect example of that. And then you've got all the, you know, the scalpers and the whole thing, and it just drives this price up. And it's not just L.A. It's any major venue. Look at Phantom tickets in New York. And it has a – yes, they're probably amazing shows, and they are. And the sporting events are iconic, and they're a great thing to be a part of. But there's got to be at some point a barrier in your mind that says, no, I'm not going to spend $2,000 to sit. But many people did.
They sure did. And to your point about this is in other venues too, I went not too long ago and saw Hamilton and got tickets on StubHub. Now, StubHub is very smart because they show you how many seats are available.
Yeah.
But then I noticed what they recently did is they added another pop-up that says how many people are viewing this page.
Right.
So now you're feeling more of that takeaway selling.
Hotels.com does the same thing. Other people are viewing your room. Six people have purchased in this area. It's
right.
Amazing.
These are psychological triggers.
Oh, and the airlines. Oh, you and I really think about that. And that's just cookies. I mean, you search one thing, you step away, search it again, it doubles. Step away, search it again, it triples. And we did that on two separate computers, different locations, and the same exact thing happened to us. And you cannot tell me that that ticket went up on different airlines to different locations. It's annoying.
They have it down.
Rather
but the book breaks the spell. Let's
Sorry,
put it that way.
That's, yeah, back to the book, because I could really go on and on about this, but that's why I wanted to have you on, because it's awareness. It's a matter of awareness. It's bringing awareness to the ways that our brain can easily get hooked into the perception of and the memes of going along with the crowd, going into the halo effect with the social, you know, climbing. And it's really good to know about. So required reading, once again, I want you to put this on all of your teenage reading lists, and you will expect a book report at the end of the summer. It is Brian Boxer Walkler's Perceptual Intelligence is the name of the book. Thank you so much for joining me. Really great.
Pleasure to be here again with you. And yeah, we really didn't have time to go into that chapter, but there is an amazing chapter on sex. So do go get the book.
Okay, and that's a good cliffhanger.
It's on Amazon and everywhere books are sold.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This is a really great book.
Thanks.
All right. And thank you all so much for listening and for having the perceptual intelligence to listen to The Aware Show. Until next time, I'm Lisa Garr, and I invite you to stay aware.